It's The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Kids don't have to use drugs to experience their consequences. When parents or caregivers use illegal drugs, kids can be at risk. They face the dangers of neglect and violence, physical, sexual, mental, emotional abuse. So communities are coming together to protect children in unsafe environments with drugs. How have you seen drugs affect kids near you? Were you a child who lived with parents who used or sold drugs? Were you a caregiver who couldn't take care of children because of your own addiction? Tell us your story. 1-800-642-1234. You can call or you can email ideas@wpr.org. We're talking with two people who are part of a partnership that helps communities keep children safe from exposure to drug environments. They're on the steering committee for the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. Mike Osmond is a detective for Buffalo County. Mike, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
And Amy Regan is a social worker with the Eau Claire County Department of Human Services. Amy, thanks for being here on The Morning Show.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
Mike, help us understand, how big of an issue is this in Wisconsin? How many children are endangered by drugs here?
Well, it's certainly tough to put a number on that. We've definitely seen a rise in the amount of drug use, particularly methamphetamine in the western part of the state. And as the drug usage rises, then the impact of the children is certainly going to increase as well.
Yeah. Amy, what does drug endangerment look like? What does it mean to be a drug endangered child?
Unfortunately, what we're seeing is significant neglect. The children's basic needs are often not being met, as well as their social, emotional needs. They are, they're struggling in the school setting. They are oftentimes unable to even get to school, depending on their age. And then just within the home is oftentimes very unkempt, and they are fending for themselves at very young ages.
And are we talking about parents doing drugs, or are we talking about really anyone in children's lives who are doing drugs, using drugs, making drugs? Help us really define the problem.
Certainly starting at the parental level oftentimes, but what we know about people that are using is often there are multiple adults, whether they're additional caregivers or just other adults within the home that are also using, which is really increasing the significance of other forms of abuse and neglect that can occur. The more adults you have within a home environment of a child that are using, you're increasing the risk for physical abuse, sexual abuse, additional emotional abuse and neglect.
Amy, how have you seen drug addiction impact families here in Wisconsin? Tell us your take.
It has really been a significant part of our casework for the last couple of years. It really truly is tearing families apart. When children are having to be removed from the environments, which happens most frequently, we're trying to bring in other relative caregivers to help with that child, but that also means that that can become kind of a rift in the family, because we're asking that they're taking care of the children, therefore aren't always able to be a support for the addicted parent.
Mike, Amy describes it as tearing apart families. What have you seen?
Yeah, all of her descriptions are right on. Again, when you have a parent or caregiver, and I think it's important to for the listeners to know too that it's not only a parental situation. The children are at risk of any type of user or addict, that has a caregiving role. So just because you're not a parent and you have you're a short-term caregiver, the impacts of the drugs themselves can certainly take effect on the children for a small time. So but when you talk about tearing the families apart, addiction is a tough thing for people to overcome, and there's so many other effects that other than just the health effects that go for long periods of time. We have studies that have shown through the adverse childhood experiences, studies that have shown that, you know, childhood experiences at under age 18 can affect a child for the rest of their life in many different ways, both mental health, physical health, and certainly substance abuse throughout their lives.
Mike Osmond is a detective for Buffalo County. Amy Regan is a social worker with the Eau Claire County Department of Human Services. They're part of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. And we want to know, how do you think that communities and schools and families can work together to tackle this issue of drug endangered children? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We have John in Stoughton who's joining us this morning. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and great topic, great conversation. It's a really bad issue in a lot of our communities, so thanks for doing that. I had two questions, I guess, a question about what you guys are looking at, and then a comment on how we could maybe help my ideas. One was that I was wondering if alcohol is at all considered in your studies and in your work. I think everybody would probably agree alcohol abuse is the number one form of drug abuse in the state of Wisconsin, and alcoholism is rampant. I grew up in an alcoholic environment. So I was just wondering if you could talk about that a little bit. And then also my suggestion is, you know, if these drugs were legalized and treated as a medical issue, this wouldn't be, you know, we wouldn't have drug dealers in homes if this stuff was legalized and treated as a medical issue rather than a criminal issue.
All right. Thanks, John. We appreciate it. Mike, are we looking at alcohol when we're talking about drug-endangered children, or are we looking at controlled substances only?
Controlled substances. We go off of state statute for the child neglect, and under that state statute, it specifically says controlled substances. Now, your caller is certainly right. Alcohol is a you know, certainly a contributing factor to many of the issues that law enforcement deal with on a daily basis. But our focus is on the controlled substance.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Amy, help us understand, could parents unknowingly have a child who's endangered by drugs? Do you ever come across that where it's not in their home, but maybe a home where the child spends time?
Absolutely. You know, we always try to educate parents on the environments that your children are in. Ask those questions. It's not always an easy topic of conversation, but certainly ensure that you're aware of where your children are going when they're hanging out with friends, because we certainly see that. Many of the families that we work with, you know, even while we're there, there's times when the neighbor kids will come over to play. So yes, it is impacting, because oftentimes, you know, these are things that you're not necessarily seeing unless you know the family very well, because parents have a way of hiding their addiction. That's, you know, they're not wanting that to be something that is well known. So oftentimes you're not seeing it, but listen to kids, listen to the cues, listen to their play, because oftentimes you will see things even if they don't understand what they're seeing. Watching their play and listening to the words that they have to say can enlighten you on what may be going on next door.
And trusting kids. Our conversation continues. Amy Regan and Mike Osmond stay with us. They're part of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. How do you think communities and families can work together to help kids who are in environments with drugs? Where do we even start to come up with the solution? And what's your experience? What's your interaction with drugs? How did it shape your childhood? What do you want other people to know? 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Coalitions across Wisconsin are working to help kids living in homes where people make or use drugs. They're trying to identify children most at risk. They're watching for kids who don't have the right clothes for the season, or noticing unexplained injuries, or keeping an eye out for children who are constantly afraid. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about drug-endangered children in Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. How have you seen drugs affect your community? What worries you about the adults and children dealing with drug environments? What do you want people to know about helping? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. There's a line for you. You can also email ideas at WPR or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking with Eau Claire County social worker Amy Regan and Buffalo County Detective Mike Osmond. They're part of this partnership that helps communities keep children safe from exposure to drug environments. Amy, let's talk about how you work with families facing the issue. I mean, what initial steps are taken when you realize that there's a child in danger because they're around drugs?
The initial step would typically start at a joint investigation with law enforcement and human services to kind of get a full understanding of what is going on and a decision as to how intervention will happen with the family. Once there, if we can certainly determine that there are concerns for drug exposure for the children, we continue to follow up as to, you know, what is the safest option for these children. If parents are under the influence, we know that their use is happening within the home. Quite a few other factors that may go into the decision, which is not an easy one, but it may be that the children are removed from the home and the addiction is addressed with the parents, as well as services for the children to ensure that we can have them in a safe environment and we can work to reunify the family as a whole, but in a healthy environment.
Yeah. How does that work? We often, want to make sure that families stay together for as long as possible. And also you don't want to jeopardize children's safety by leaving them in the home. So is removal a last resort, or is that a first step to make sure that everybody's safe while you figure out what's going on?
That's a hard question to answer because our first option is always keeping a family together. But safety is the largest component of that. And, you know, what we know about drug use and a parent who is under the influence frequently, that is not a safe environment. So oftentimes in these situations, while we can, you know, work to intervene with the family early on, if there are signs and symptoms that we see earlier, but once we get to the point of what we call a DEC response, that often does mean that a child is going to be removed for a period of time. But we work with the parent or the primary caregiver to say, who is someone that you trust? Who is another family member? Because we don't want to separate the family any more than we have to. But physical safety is one of our number one priorities. And that often does lead to a removal from the home in these types of situations, especially when we're talking methamphetamine, because of the significance of exposure.
Mike, is that what you see too?
Yeah. In our county, meth is the number one issue as far as the drug endangered children. So we focus a lot of our efforts on public education and, trying to solicit those reports to intervene as early as possible. But certainly, we're not immune to all drugs. It's just, we see other drugs, but our main focus is meth.
Yeah. Mike, are parents or are these people who are using drugs and endangering children, are they the people who are bringing the issue to your attention? Or is this really often reported by someone else who's noticing these signs of abuse and neglect?
Yeah, so normally, I would say on average, the majority of our reports come in from other family members, either that or from other drug investigation control buys or information that we receive from other drug users, drug dealers. But majority of the reports come in from other family members, which is important for our program is because it's very difficult to identify some of these families that are at high risk without reports from the family members. It's one thing to be open to drug use. I don't mean open, but it's one thing to say, you know what, that's their private lives, and I'm not going to intervene with that. But I think that the public needs to look at it and say, you know, when there's children involved, that's the tipping point, and that's the time where they need to pick up the phone and call and say, you know what, my son and daughter or my family member struggles with addiction, and that's, you know, their choice. But it's not the choice of their two-year-old to be impacted by meth. We've done hair follicle testing that's shown infant children as every day or every other day meth use levels in their system. So it's important, you know, that we get those family members to call, because those are the ones that give us the best information.
Mike Osmond is a detective for Buffalo County, and Amy Regan is a social worker with the Eau Claire County Department of Human Services. And they're part of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. Have you seen drugs affect your community? 800-642-1234. Jim from Oconomowoc couldn't stay with us, but called in. Jim says he was raised as a child in a drug-endangered environment, and then he ended up repeating the cycle with his daughter. He says he thinks community centers could help, maybe could be a place for kids to go or to have adult support outside of the family. Amy, how can we stop this cycle from repeating? And could community centers, these other places, be part of the answer?
So kind of answering that twofold, you know, addressing the issue with the families as soon as we become aware is one of the biggest hopes in breaking the cycle, because it is unfortunate. We are seeing generations. I've only been in human services for close to 8 years, and I've already seen second generations of families with, you know, drug-affected situations. And we want to, well, the biggest thing that I talk to these parents about, because obviously when we first come into a situation, there is a lot of stress. These parents are not wanting what's going on to become public knowledge. They, you know, they have that feeling of guilt and remorse oftentimes. But what we try to let them know is that we are here now. Like, there's no way that we can go away at this point. There is a concern, but we want to work with them to help this situation. We want the kids to be aware of how can we continue to break this. The older the kids get that we become involved with, you know, we want to educate them. We don't want it to be a secret of what's going on, the white elephant in the room anymore.
Right, trying to remove that shame.
Absolutely. And then second is the education within the community. Absolutely, community partners can be part of this and breaking the cycle, offering options for kids and families to get out in the community, but also being aware of the signs and symptoms in case there is a concern. But being safe places for these children to go and be able to open up to, because quite frankly, some of our reports often come from with inside the home. So the kids that are talking about it and having caring adults that know that these are unsafe situations and how to make reports for on behalf of the children is a huge part to breaking the cycle as well.
Mike, what do we do? Are there policies we can put in place? Are there laws lawmakers can pass? Are there things we can do as communities or as law enforcement agencies? What do we do?
Well, you know, our state government passed a new law, you know, and I forgot when that was enacted, but it's been recent, within the last year or two, that is an addition to the child neglect statute, and that states that it, you know, protects, it's a protection from exposure to the distribution or manufacture of controlled substances, and that's under the child neglect statute. That's been very helpful for us to address that. Not only, you know, everybody says, "Oh, a new law," just, well, that, you know, that way the cops can go out and arrest the parent. What that does, though, for us is that that gives us an in to assist the children itself, and provides you know, the treatment element to the parent or caregiver, the services element to the parent or caregiver, one, through human services, but two, also it can be court mandated. And oftentimes we see, you know, where parents, you know, choose children over addiction. Now, it does go the other way too. A lot of parents will choose addiction over over their children. But and that's unfortunate. But the children at that point, you know, are away from the parent or caregiver that's using. So, you know, what do we do? I think that we need to increase our treatment options. In Buffalo County, we don't have a treatment center. There's no way for a citizen in Buffalo County to go and get services in Buffalo County. They have to go to up to Eau Claire or down to La Crosse. So I think
more widespread,
you know,
options, I think,
for treatment would be a start.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Mike Osmond is a detective for Buffalo County. We've talked with him and Amy Regan, who's a social worker in Eau Claire, and they are part of the Wisconsin Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. Coming up, we're talking about businesses run by women and how we can support them. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 to be part of that conversation. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Up next is news. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Voltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. Small businesses employ more than a million people here in Wisconsin. That's about half of everyone working in private industry. And even though our state has about the same number of men and women, more people work at small companies run by men than by women entrepreneurs. We're talking about small businesses with women in charge. Who, what, where, and why that matters. And there's space for you. Are you a woman who owns a small business? What challenges have you faced? What have you learned? Maybe you support companies run by women. Why do you go out of your way to shop at certain places? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Rebecca Cook is a small business owner in Eau Claire. She's the founder of the Red Letter Grant. That is a program that provides scholarships to Wisconsin women in business. And she joins us from our Eau Claire studio this morning. Rebecca, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we have to start with money. We just do. What is it like currently for women running businesses in Wisconsin? Do they have the capital that they need to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you have just 31% of businesses in Wisconsin that are women owned. And you have to ask the question of why aren't folks stepping up to start their own business. And I think a big piece of that is having the startup capital and the financial resources to do so. And so, you know, looking at ways that we can support women through, you know, micro grants or whether that's venture capital, you know, I think that's the biggest fear of people getting going. So
you mentioned that it's time for people to step up and fill this, but why should more women become small business owners in Wisconsin? What do we get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it leaves not only a gap in ownership, but a gap in leadership and mentorship. So it's like, how are we growing our next group of leaders in business? And so I think I think that women bring, you know, there's a report that has said that they deliver higher revenue when you invest in women, more than twice as much per dollar invested. So
you're saying that more women as business owners could help Wisconsin's economy?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's important to have diversity among small business owners, not just, you know, different genders, but also different ethnicities or experiences? What do we get out of that?
Yeah, I think when you bring more people to the table, you know, you're bringing more ideas to the table, you're bringing more innovation to the table, and not making space for that, I think you're losing out on a lot of growth that our economy could see in new ways and more innovative ways. And so that's something that I'm really devoted to doing.
Yeah. And part of that devotion is this Red Letter Grant program. Tell us what that does.
Yes. So the Red Letter Grant is a nonprofit organization that I founded back in 2016. And we support and empower female entrepreneurs throughout Western Wisconsin by providing startup capital, curating small business workshops, and cultivating mentor and peer networks. And so currently we serve all of Western Wisconsin. So that's a 9-county region where we're working to bolster women in business.
And where do you get your funding?
Yeah, so everything kind of started out when I launched this program as a social entrepreneurship arm of my business. So I own a small business in downtown Eau Claire. And it was important to me from, you know, from some of the education that I had taking social entrepreneurship classes in college to incorporate a social component somehow into my business. And so on the 1 year anniversary of my shop opening, I decided to launch this program, and it started out to be 15% of sales from a section of goods at my store. But that quickly snowballed from a lot of the support from the Eau Claire community of people wanting to get involved and liking this idea of giving other small business owners, especially women, a hand up. And so so that snowballed into different events and different individuals stepping up to support our efforts. And so just this year, this late winter, we received our 501c3 certification. So it's really outgrown this idea of being a social entrepreneurship component to being an organization that stands on its own 2 feet. So we've been receiving a lot of funding from other businesses throughout the Eau Claire community in Wisconsin and individuals. And so, yeah, so it's been pretty, it just in being around for just 2 years, it's been pretty eye-opening at how excited people, I think, are to support women in this capacity.
Are grant programs like this part of kind of a bonus for people who are starting businesses, or is this really a make or break element to women owning small businesses in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mix. So the, you know, the grants that we give out are $2,000. So when you think about, you know, maybe a large, a super, you know, large startup kind of that's going to have a lot of employees versus a brick and mortar, you know, small town, downtown business, the needs are going to be different, obviously, there. So $2,000 might be a drop in a bucket in one of those scenarios, but $2,000 to someone opening, you know, a service-based or, you know, retail-based business in one of our rural communities is a huge plus and a huge incentive. And so I think additionally what makes our program and I think what makes us unique is that we offer additional services. So it's not just startup capital, but you're getting additional support through, you know, we have these small business workshops that we offer around different topics. So from finance and tax workshops to social media workshops to business law. So you're getting kind of more than just here's some money, go figure out what to do with it. But you have this kind of community of support that you're getting a lot of answers or questions answered from. So
Becca Cook is the founder of the Red Letter Grant, which provides scholarships to Wisconsin women in business. She's also a small business owner in Eau Claire. And we're looking for your stories. Are you a woman who owns a small business? Where did you start it? When did you take the plunge? What challenges have you faced so far? And maybe you've considered opening a business, but something's holding you back. Tell us about it. Ask your questions at 800-642-1234. Becca, where have you seen this used in the past as your board of directors, you know, awards these grants? What tangible examples can you give us of this changing people's experiences as women business leaders?
Yeah, I mean, so our program has awarded 13 awards total to women-owned businesses in the Chippewa Valley. And so we're starting to kind of see how some of our initial awards have impacted these women. So what's most rewarding to me is seeing actual brick and mortars open. So something that was maybe a business at somebody's kitchen table is now a staple in our community. And it's really enriching our regional economy in ways where, you know, with tourism and these small shops that we're helping fund and open, it makes Eau Claire a more exciting place to visit. But, you know, I think that a lot of folks that, you know, this was a side project or a, quote, side hustle from their main corporate job are really having this opportunity to kind of live out their dreams versus, you know, having it be something that they might achieve when they retire. Or it's kind of allowing people to live in the right now versus, you know, looking 20 years down the road to start a business. And so so I think that's what's been most rewarding is seeing these ideas culminate into really tangible things on our main streets.
It feels like there's something there about having a woman-owned business have a storefront as opposed to be, you know, out of their own kitchen or living room or whatever. There's something that you just feel is different because it's so present.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I think when you have a visible presence like that, the kind of message that you're sending to younger women as they're looking about, well, what could my career look like versus just stepping into the roles maybe that they've always were supposed to. I think it provides new role models in our communities, especially in a lot of our rural communities where it feels like there might be only one route to go.
Becca, here in Wisconsin, what types of businesses are women starting? Is there any specific trend that you're seeing?
You know, my experience is a little different just because I'm working more with that small business owner versus some of the larger industries that we have. I mean, what I'm seeing a lot from the women that I'm working with in our area is a lot of service-based business, a lot of retail. And that's primarily, you know, what I think we've been doing up here in the Chippewa Valley. Also a lot of food-based businesses is something else that we've seen. I think from a statewide perspective, I think that's a little bit different. I think that there has been some significant investment just in general and for all businesses in our tech industry and manufacturing. And I think those things are still king in Wisconsin. And I think it's just getting women to move more into seeking out startups in those fields.
So what do women from across the state and your region tell you about wanting to start a small business and what holds them back?
Yeah, and I think this also stems from when I originally thought about starting the grant, is I had women coming into my shop saying, gosh, I really wish I could do this, but, you know, I just don't think I'd have the time or, you know, the risk, the financial risk feels like it would be too much. I think those are kind of the two main things that I was hearing. And so that's really what our program tries to address, is that financial fear and that financial risk of, okay, when you go all in, when you leave your corporate job, when you leave insurance, when you leave a lot of things that I think are built in into careers like that, I think that's the biggest fear of taking that all in plunge. And so I think when you start to build programs, whether it's the Red Letter Grant or it's somebody that might be interested in doing something else similarly around the state, it's how do we support women past just startup capital, because that's going to be really important. But there's all these other components that you need to learn before, you know, you take that leap and take the next step of actually owning your business.
Sure. You don't eliminate the risk because there are some supports in place.
Right. Exactly.
We're talking with Becca Cook about women and small businesses in our state. And there's room for you to join the conversation. Have you found that enough resources exist to support women in business in your community? Where did you get the money to start your own small business? Do you know someone who struggled to pull together the capital to launch their dream? Tell us about it. Share your stories. 800-642-1234. Join in here on The Morning Show. You're listening to The Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on The Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Forbes reports that only a couple of years ago, just 2% of venture capital funding went to U.S. companies run by women. That's less than $2 billion. Male entrepreneurs, they got $83 billion in funding. We're talking about supporting women who start small businesses here in Wisconsin, and we want to know, have you gotten grants to start a small business? How do you use the money? Maybe you're a woman who started a business but had to close. What would you have done differently? 800-642-1234. Call or email ideas@wpr.org. Becca Cook stays with us. She's a small business owner in Eau Claire, and she works to empower other women to start small businesses in Wisconsin. Becca, you opened your store selling stuff, as you put it, in Eau Claire 4 years ago. How did you know you had the right support to take the risk?
You know, I'm from Eau Claire, and so it's my hometown, it's my home base, and I didn't know that I had the right support, to be honest. And what was beautiful was the way that this community did step up to support the work and the things that I was doing here here in Eau Claire. But I didn't, it wasn't a sure bet. I didn't have a really great, you know, peer network of other women business owners. I didn't know a lot of folks moving home. I have been away for about 10 years. I didn't really have like a solid mentor necessarily going into this either. And so I think that's been a driver of trying to create that too for other women, to have somebody to ask what might be, quote, like silly questions, but are actual real questions that, you know, you might need help with. So, yeah, so I didn't necessarily have that, but it was beautiful, I think, in the way that the community stepped up and then different people started to emerge to be really great peer mentors. So
say more about those silly questions. I think as a woman, I understand what it feels like to think, oh, well, this makes me sound less smart if I don't,
sure.
if I ask this question. And that can be censorship.
Right. And I think that's a big thing. I think that when you're a business owner, you're held in some capacity at a pedestal that you should know all the answers, but you don't. And, you know, things for me, like just learning how to set up payroll, that kind of stuff, those aren't things that you should intrinsically know, but I felt silly asking for help with that. And then I eventually obviously did. But, you know, I think that there is, you know, we were talking about fears of starting your own business, of not knowing everything, but you also don't need to know everything. And I think that's what's beautiful about trying to start and cultivate both a peer network and a mentor network is, you know, it leaves space to be vulnerable, to ask questions that that you need to know.
You don't need to know everything is right. A difficult thing to learn. It's not easy to take on.
Yeah, exactly.
We found that in 2018, the average annual revenue for women-owned businesses was about $244,000 less than businesses that are run by men. So, is this a trend that is as accurate in Wisconsin? Can we change this gap? Why are women businesses, you know, bringing in less money?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure that I, you know, have the answer necessarily to that. You know, one thing that I think women do is they put themselves last a lot of times, I feel like, in a business. I've talked to a lot of folks that don't pay themselves even as they're getting going. And I think sometimes that can impact too, even how you do. If you're not taking care of yourself, it might also impact your business. But I don't necessarily have a great answer to that.
Sure. It seems like when I'm thinking about it, have you seen women take as many risks on even things like expansion, or are women just as brave as you've seen men when they're expanding their businesses, or you know, do they get it set up, it's successful, and so it's not broken, so you don't fix it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a conversation I've been having with a lot of folks in my area lately, is this idea of like your second stage growth. Like you might be humming along, like for example, my shop might be humming along, but how do you grow past just plateauing as a business? And I think that is something that, you know, I think after taking that initial risk of startup, how do you grow through the second phase to become a really profitable company organization? And I think that's something that I don't know that we're preparing entrepreneurs for as well in our state and in our region. This is a question and conversation that I've had with a lot of people recently of second stage growth. Like what do we need to do, not just for women, but for some of our small businesses in general, to propel them to kind of that next phase of growth and of scaling up in like a bigger way. So
Becca Cook is the founder of the Red Letter Grant, which provides scholarships to Wisconsin women in business. She's also a small business owner in Eau Claire. And there's still time for your story. Have you received a grant for a small business? Do you believe there are enough resources to support women in our state? 800-642-1234. In March, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes visited entrepreneurs in Eau Claire to talk about how to help small businesses. Here he is talking with TV station WQOW.
I believe that women are 50% of the population, so we have to do a little better job of making sure, again, that support is there.
Well, you can hear the excitement in the background there. Becca, what type of support should we be offering at the state level to help support women in small businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a state level, we do see quite a bit of support. You know, from our economic development arm, WEDC does a lot to, I think, support not only entrepreneurs but women entrepreneurs in some of the work that they do. I think that there's more that we can do. You know, I don't have a great answer to that question either, but I think that there's more that we can do. I think for supporting more of our rural communities and maybe some more of our underserved communities. And that's something that our program is really determined to do in our coming years as we grow.
And in 2020, the Red Letter Grant is going to serve all of northern, central, and western Wisconsin. Tell us about this expansion. What's the status of small business in those parts, and why is there a need?
Yeah, I think we've done a great job of working to meet a lot of the needs that we've seen from small business owners in western Wisconsin. But I think there's a lot of underserved and forgotten communities in northern Wisconsin and in central Wisconsin that don't have that don't have both financial resources, but some of the tangible resources that our program offers of small business workshops, some of that hands-on education where folks can really get a leg up, you know, and get some background before they go out to start their business and write a business plan. And so so I think, you know, bringing resources, both financial but also, you know, human resources to help educate folks in those areas and kind of change the tides and revitalize some of our forgotten downtowns and main streets.
You've talked with women all across the state who own those small businesses on main streets. What do you see as to why some businesses are successful and why some don't? What's the answer here?
I think a lot of it is the communities in which they start and whether, you know, folks are willing to support small businesses versus big box stores. I think you see in a lot of our smaller communities, too, the rise of Walmarts, the rise of Dollar Generals, and it's really getting folks to get back to the basics and get back to supporting downtown businesses, even though shopping online or shopping at a big box store might be easier. I think you see small businesses be successful in small communities that choose to shop small, just period.
I have a big question and not much time to answer it. How do we know what it looks like when women owning small businesses is successful? How do we gauge that?
I think you see the overall growth of a community and local economy thriving. I think that's a short answer to a big question, but I think you see the overall business ecosystem of a community thriving because that means that there's more than one person at the table, that there's a lot of different identities and backgrounds represented.
Becca, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
Rebecca Cook is the founder of the Red Letter Grant. It provides scholarships to Wisconsin women in businesses expanding in 2020. Rebecca is also a small business owner in Eau Claire, and she joined us from our studios in Eau Claire this morning. You can find resources to support women in business on our website. We've got it along with more information about the morning show programs. Just go to WPR.org/mornings. Your host, Kate Archer Kent, is back tomorrow. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.